Hello! Welcome to Leto Narratives Dissidents. This is our March live stream. We are talking, of course, about we're doing our Kickstarter. We already have a couple of people here saying hello in the chat. And because I actually remembered to schedule this event on Twitch. and that's something I had been forgetting to do previously. But let's take a look, see if the Kickstarter's updated with me. Anyways, we are currently Kickstarting season 3 right now. That's the most important thing. Be sure to back it so you can get early access. Help us get as many episodes as we possibly can. Mm. Because we've already hit a couple stretch goals, but we have more to go and we can review more things. Episode 0 is already available on the podcast feed where we're reviewing an adventure, Hole in the Sky, from Dungeon Crawl Classics. And, James, how are you doing? Good evening.
Good evening. It's very much evening over here because of course, as the joke on the thing says, it's later here. But right now it's weird because the US and Europe no longer change their clocks on the same date. They used to, they don't anymore. I am only 5 hours ahead of Ross and Greg instead of the usual 6, which has caused confusion all over. And I apologize for having to correct the first email I sent out. It's dark and cold here. But apart from that, it's great. I went to a conference about role-playing games yesterday, which was fantastic.
Yeah. Let's see. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. As I was telling the guys before we started the stream, I'm looking forward to maybe hopefully qualifying to get some traitorous nerves in my lower back electrocuted so that my daily backaches, go away for maybe a year until the nerves regenerate. So wish me luck with that, everybody.
Yeah.
Other than that, usual writing, playing games.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were telling us it's a combination of what sounds like medieval hot wires and microsurgery, which is just, every so often something just reminds me I am living in the universe that when I was young was science fiction.
Yeah.
James, that happened to me the first time a cop tased me instead of hitting me with a nightstick.
I often joke that we live in a shitty cyberpunk dystopia written in the 1980s.
I've actually never been tased, but yeah. I had that joke in the chamber, and yeah, this does feel like the future that William Gibson would have come up with after getting hit in the head really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What if Bruce Sterling, but stupid?
I've sent out an order for the prints of the Night Clerk zine to go out. So I'll be shipping those out to backers in the next couple of weeks. So that's good. Also, I have submitted events to Gen Con because I will be attending Gen Con this year. I've submitted RPPR live meetup. A Delta Green panel with Arc Dream Publishing. Caleb Stokes will be on that one, and Kent Height, and me, because I've written some Delta Green stuff. Also a panel on horror and role-playing games, and a panel on actual play podcasting. I submitted times. Hopefully I get the times that I submitted. We'll see. So I'll hold off until I actually get confirmation about when and where those are going to be held, but that will be fun. We are doing the Leto Narrative Season 3 Kickstarter, and one of the stretch goals was, as I will show right here, the stretch goals, a live stream for 3 months. We will be live streaming on Twitch and YouTube to discuss RPGs and answer questions from listeners, and I think one of the things
We should just jump in and say, this is not one of those live streams. This is a freebie because we want to just talk to you people, bring you up to date on what's going on. We need to talk about the NASA thing as well.
Yes, that's amazing. So I think for these monthly live streams, we'll, one of the things we'll be doing is looking at RPG products, but like free PDFs, things we wouldn't normally consider for the show because for the actual podcast. So these will be not quite as structured or the edited. They'll be live streams. But what are we talking about? So NASA put out the Lost Universe, NASA's tabletop role-playing game adventure. Call it Null Adventures. It's time to gather your party in your favorite RPG system. Well, as long as it has class and levels. So a dark
mystery. And chaotic evil and tieflings.
Yep. Yeah. A dark mystery is settled over
DCs.
Over the city of Aldestron on the rogue planet of Exlaris. And the research is dedicated to studying the cosmos have disappeared, and the Hubble Space Telescope has vanished from Earth's timeline. Only an ambitious crew of adventurers can uncover what is lost. Are you up to the challenge? Yes, designed for 4 to 7, level 7 to 10 characters. Easily adaptable to your preferred tabletop role-playing game. Yeah, I can't wait to bring my level 10 Delta Green agent into this adventure. Yeah.
I would love to see Delta Green characters in this world. I think this would be, yeah. They would just
quick put a dagger in her hand so we can say it was self-defense.
Oh no!
Oh god! Oh god!
Actually, Craig, you literally wrote a Delta Green adventure set in space, although it goes a little differently.
Well, it like every Delta Green adventure, it ends with people screaming, "Oh god! Oh god!" But no god listens.
So yeah, there's a gameplay booklet, a map, and then of course a poster. And so yeah, we can just dive into it. Let's see if there's any comments. Evening, everyone. I hope everyone under the load is having a safe continued. Aw, thank you. Thank you, Hieronymus. And let's see. I saw the adverts in my periphery many times, only found out this was at this weekend, and it blew my mind. Levels 7 to 10 is a fairly large difference. That's actually a really good point. Any kind of D&D-ish RPG, there's a, like, you get new levels of spells. So, like, let's just zoom in. So we got the little NASA logo. Nice little dragon here around the photo of the Hubble Space Telescope.
I mean, the space pictures are really nice. The diagram of the Hubble Telescope is beautifully rendered, as I would expect from friggin' NASA.
Yeah.
But you show them the thing, Ross.
Yeah, here we go. Here's show the...
Yeah. I was going to say, show them the word search. You know the one.
Okay, let's go back to the front. All right, let's see here. Will. Oops. I hope if I could spell. Oh, no. 151 matches.
Uh-huh. Get put a space on the end.
Oh, sorry, whole words.
That'll take it down to, I think, 140 some, but in a 144-page book.
Yeah.
That's a lot, and I trusted NASA.
Just look at this paragraph.
Yeah. Ugh.
She will be ready. She will be a steady and trustworthy ally. She will become hospitable. She will keep an eye. She will warn. And they will work together. So
you don't want to criticize a writer for making one mistake, but making one mistake this many times, it made me sad.
I think part of, you know, honestly, I think, you know, there's no like RPG equivalent of the elements of style, right? Like there's no. Like universal guide, like read this guy, these guidelines.
So we've talked about creating one, remember?
I'm sort of writing one. Yeah. Very slowly.
Yeah.
My things about this is I actually think the story that I want to know is not the story detailed in the adventure. I want to know how this product came about. I want to know where it came from. I want to know the process of going through NASA to go, let's release a generic role-playing adventure about the Hubble Space Telescope.
Being kidnapped by a young green dragon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. One thing that it occurred to me is we should say whenever we're going to talk about an adventure, we're going to spoil it completely because you can't accurately talk about something's plot and something's structure without spoiling what is going to happen in it. I apologize for that. It's just part of the critical process. And that goes for this episode and future episodes where we're talking about adventures. Do not expect that, oh, I was hoping to play that. I wonder what these people think of it. No, we're going to ruin it for you. But yeah, I searched Christine Mitchell, who's the credited author. She has no previous credits on Drive-Thru RPG or DM's Guild. She's a senior production specialist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Rockfield, Maryland, which I think I just mispronounced. It's been a while since I was there. But yeah, I was saving this to the end, but I'm going to say it now. If I went into the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center and said, "Hi, I'm a games designer, but I've got some thoughts about radiation shielding for crewed missions to other planets," they would call security. If I wrote a book about it, NASA would not read the book, because that what they do is very skilled. Games design is also a skill. The difference is games design looks easy. Mm-hmm. It really isn't.
This is
all respect to Christina. This is, you know, for someone's first published adventure, this is creditable in places. The fact it's gone out on this massive, massive publicity thing is a crying shame, because this is, I'm going to say it, not a good role-playing adventure.
So I know people who work for federal agencies, and I know one of their ongoing missions, especially like a public-facing organization like NASA, is literally public relations. They're really like, hey, this is what reminding people of what they do and like the benefits that they give to society as a whole. So I think there's this ongoing mission to educate and raise awareness of their mission. And it's just an uphill battle. There's, you know, such a tyranny of there's so much going on. There's so much news. You know, the news media focuses on crisis and disasters, not like, hey, we successfully did this thing. You know, that gets, you know, 1/10 the headlines that a major, you know, screw up does. So I think this is just part of like, hey, this is novel enough to get some attention, to raise awareness of, you know, the Hubble Space Telescope and just like our mission at large. And so I think that sort of is the, and also obviously NASA, I'm not surprised that there's a lot of people who play RPGs who work at NASA. So,
NASA is full of enormous geeks. Who would ever guess?
Stop the presses.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of like, okay, well, we got to do something. Or let's do something. Hey, I have this idea. Why don't we do an adventure like this? And it's like, okay, if you work on it on your own time. I mean, this is clearly like a labor of love. This is not like, this is something I would guess they did after hours because they believe in it rather than, you know, on the clock hours.
Can I just come in on that footnote that I put in at that point? This is far from the role-playing industry's first brush with NASA. Sandy Antunes, who set up RPGNet back in the early 90s, was, I believe, at NASA at the time he did that, and continues to do bits. No, he's left RPGNet ages ago or sold it on, but he continues at NASA. The other person who pinged on my memory was Barry Nakazono, who was the developer or co-developer of Phoenix Command, one of the most legendarily complicated role-playing systems of all time. He got out of role-playing and went off to be a rocket scientist, literally. I thought it was NASA. Actually, it was JPL.
JPL's the Cowboys, man. That's where, what's his name? The L. Ron Hubbard's buddy.
The Satanist.
He wasn't a Satanist. He was a Thelemic magician. Come on, let's be straight. But he did go try and create the great
Jack Parsons.
Jack Parsons.
Yeah.
Crazy Jack.
I mean, there's a role-playing game.
Gareth knows, of course.
Gareth knows. Gareth probably has written adventures about Jack.
Oh, my God. And there's another great Gareth idea. D&D scenario. I wouldn't do D&D scenarios. I would do some other, you know, you could do GURPS.
Well, GURPS can do everything, yeah, but we want people to actually play this, Greg, so it has to be TNT. National Park Service, ATF, IRS. I mean, that would be great. I would, especially the I remember like the Charles Schroes's the Laundry novels. They talk about how the postal inspector becomes the premier or one of the American anti-occult agencies because everyone forgets that they are. It's like the Comstock Commission. So yeah, like if you mess with the postal inspectors, you're just done. Like they don't
see. And if it was D&D, I would have one where it literally is a maze. It's it's an actual dungeon where. and it's just you just have to find this file, but you have to get through the entire dungeon full of combat encounters with angry with clerks who haven't seen the sun in years and the trow, no, the filing cabinet's falling, run for it. So
none of which is in this adventure, unfortunately.
None of which is in this adventure.
Yep.
My take on it, one of the meaner quotes I wrote in my notes as I was reading it was, it's like someone loaded a blunderbuss with the future conditional and the phrase Hubble Space Telescope and then just shot an OSR model. And to get into my philosophy of designing adventures for role-playing games, if I'm throwing something together for the gang of people who know me and have fridge privileges at my house, I'm not worried about doing something that's it's a C+, it's fine. If I'm going to write something that is going to be published to strangers for money, I feel like I should do something that they cannot do on their own. And, maybe that's just, I'm going to stat up all the monsters and have if I was a D&D designer, the D&D designers I know have convinced me that balancing encounters is a specialized skill that not everybody has, and it is an invisible skill, like James was talking about. If you're on the outside, writing an adventure doesn't look that hard, but it's not as easy as it appears. And so I was waiting for, I'm like, what's the special sauce here? What is the thing that I could not have thought of on my own? And the special sauce is the inside information and access to NASA graphics, diagrams. But I'm not sure that's special enough.
All public images posted by NASA are public domain. Every government agency, federal U.S. government agency uses public domain.
I mean, was it just me that the text felt most confident when it was talking about the cosmological stuff in the appendices, where it's talking about, nobody really knows what zero point energy is, but here's how we know it exists, and here's what gravitational lensing is, and
mm-hmm.
Although I gotta throw a cavil in about the zero point energy. My understanding, I'm but a humble English major, but my understanding is that if you took all the zero point energy in our entire solar system considered as a spherical volume of space, it would run a 60-watt light bulb, or maybe a 40.
I have some thoughts about radiation shielding.
The energy's there, but it's just teeny tiny. So,
James,
That stuff is really interesting. The rest of it is, it does feel, and I've seen this tendency in my own writing, I've certainly seen it in other people's writing, it takes a while to get going because there's a lack of confidence in just getting to the adventure. Mm-hmm. And when it does, well, we'll come to that. But the setup essentially is that it's not as simple as just being, you are player characters in a fantasy world. Your player characters are all scientists at NASA, but in a universe where Hubble doesn't exist. Or rather, where Hubble has been removed. Hubble has been taken out of that universe and everyone has forgotten about it because essentially it's been removed from the timeline, which is kind of interesting. I like that. And then your personalities are kidnapped, essentially, from this Earth to this fantasy planet, installed in the bodies of player, fantasy player characters. And then you go on an adventure. And once you get to that point, you arrive, I mean, just the opening scene is you arrive in what's, they describe it as being like a transport hub. It's, okay, I can't picture a transport hub. I don't know what a transport hub looks like. Railway station, sure, got that. Bus station, yep, airport, yes. Transport hub? Don't really know. But actually, it becomes clear, it's full of portals and stuff, and portals to different cities. Whoa, this is fantastic. Then you arrive, bang, confusing, going, oh my God, what's going on? And there's an assumption. And the problem I have, the major problem I have with this entire adventure is that it is assumed that you will follow the plot. follow the very, very obvious breadcrumbs to the inn where you are given the next, where to go next. If I was a NASA scientist that just arrived in front of a portal to another city, I would be going, how does this work? I need to understand right now how this works.
Flying at the panel. I would, what are these hex screws? Show me the guns.
Scribbling notes on this.
Yeah, it's kind of like an isekai anime. Yeah.
You're in a world with essentially free energy. They've worked out how to get free energy from whatever principle of the power of the vacuum it's originally described, whether that's zero point or dark energy or whatever hand-wavy thing you want. And then you're told, oh, well, there was this, from your timeline, there was this space telescope. And someone here, it's disappeared, and you could get it back. If I was a NASA scientist, I'd be going, space telescope, free energy for the planet from space.
Yeah.
And
at that point, I was just like, this is, it feels, I'm sorry, I'm on a tirade now.
It feels
like an introductory role-playing adventure.
It very much.
People who have not role played before, and I have to wonder if that is an artifact because it is written by somebody who has not written this type of material before. Okay, to raid over for the moment.
Yeah,
I've paused my
tirade. I'll throw something else in there with my, you know, that my lit brain hooked into is that in the setting. So the setting, the idea of the setting is, and that I'm like, okay, this was. This part I liked was that their son got et by a black hole, right? Kalapsar pulls their son in, and the resulting gravity whiplash throws the planet like a long bomb, and it is now a rogue planet. And so every friggin' wizard on the planet is like, okay, I guess we got to replace daylight and warmth now, and they do it and create a magically sustained rogue planet hurtling through space, and because of this, you know, so the wizards are revered, and it's a society that prizes learning above all else, and so much so that, you know, the dragon is not stealing gold and gems. Its trove is books and the Hubble telescope. And I could not help but read this. I'm like, is this a little, are you having your fantasy wish fulfillment moment here from NASA where you're like, wouldn't it be great if people like enjoyed and respected the unbelievable scientific knowledge we possess? But, you know, no, they don't. They're just walking around saying, well, why wouldn't I want to catch measles? It's like, well, there are a lot of good reasons you wouldn't want to catch measles, actually. It resets your immune system. It's very bad, actually. So that was my lit crit moment of, oh, you may be showed a little more than you thought you were showing. But I try and mind read an author from miles and through space and time is a classic English major trick.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's safe to say probably the people who wrote this and created it are first and foremost science educators, right? Like that's their main thing, and this is like a vehicle to educate people on science more than anything else. So and that obviously has an impact on the design of the scenario. So
I suspect that deeply jaded gamers in their AARP years are not the target audience of this. And, yeah. You know, that I went into this when I first found out this thing existed. I remember posting to Shane Ivey, "Hey, James, I did a name drop. Did you hear that?"
Whoa, not bad.
My post was, there's going to be no middle ground here. I feel like this is either going to shame everyone who's ever written a role-playing game, or it's going to have spaghettification levels of suck. Spaghettification, by the way, is what happens when you get too close to a black hole and are pulled in. And the rate at which you're pulled in speeds up the closer you get to the core of it while time dilates. So it literally stretches you out. But and it's not as bad as I was afraid it could be, but it's not as good as I hoped it might be.
Mm-hmm. Ross, which, can you just stop there? You were just on Appendix A. I want to come the bottom of Appendix A, bottom of that page.
Okay.
Greg, sorry, I interrupted. Are you still going?
It's fine. I'm out of steam.
This page or the next page?
That page, just zoom in a little bit there. This is what I talk about when I talk about column balance. Look at those columns. There is no reason for those columns to be out of balance.
Oh, I was going to ask if they were balanced. Man.
Very, very obviously not balanced. The baseline of the text does not line up.
So clearly.
Yes, it's a tiny thing, but it is a very, very good rule for telling if the graphic designer knows.
They know who we are. This was bait. This is entrapment.
So, yeah, you can see how this line does not line up with this line. And it should. It's fine if this line is shorter, because that's the end of the well, actually, no, by study, like, it's not the end of the thing. You could have continued this on. So, yeah, they do not align the columns. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so that's what it is when I talk about that. And it's just annoying because it's very easy to get it right.
That someone who works for a well-funded federal agency, presumably graphic design Michelle Belleville, I don't know if that – I would assume that it's her day job. I can't think of – but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. That's a fair point. And that's not even specific to RPGs. That's just like graphic design. That's just,
yeah.
I am interested in this puzzle, though, in the library they talk about.
Oh, yeah. The puzzles generally are just, yeah. You go, Ross. I've talked too much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have a kind of a meta point on the puzzle.
Yeah. So you approach what was once a library near the middle of the city. When the players have gotten to the ruin where the dragon is, and you know, it's a D&D type adventure. There's a dungeon. And take a minute to look at the books. Some of them seem to be newer. They can find their way to the library to the large door in the back. They can easily continue along this path. There is a wall that's painted with a mural. Though faded, the mural still shows a globular cluster, similar to the one that they'd seen in the researcher's office, brought into focus of the larger scale gravitational lens they'd seen at the observatory. The characters will be able to draw the connection between the two if they hold up the lens. Oh, that seems like basic grammar. If they hold up the lens Charlie gave them to help see, this is an illusion blocking the stairway below. So the image of the rings, so they have to, if they do not use the lens. So it's a very simple puzzle. They just have to use the lens on the mural. Like they saw the lens earlier, or they saw the cluster earlier, so they should look at the cluster with the lens. You're trying to translate like science, like physics, education, you know, astronomy into like a D&D puzzle. So through that lens. So yeah, I don't know how else you would do that without being too complicated. Because again, this is even. I think that's the weirdest thing for me is that this is meant for like higher level characters. Because even though there's like a green dragon, like
it's like,
yeah,
it's a, by 10th level, I've got true sight, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like you have so many more tools, like characters in these D&D type games become basically little, fantasy superheroes once they start being able to fly and turn invisible and,
we'll just pass wall it.
Yeah. Pass wall. Like Dungeon Crawl Classic showed us, you could just call it whatever you want, just give it the stats appropriate for a level one you know, you say, oh yeah, it's a big bad green dragon, but it's statted like a level one ogre, you know. It's the numbers don't matter. You don't have to match.
Well, and this doesn't have any numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing it assumes that it has to offer is an unusual perspective and an interesting blend of science and fantasy, and that what the GM is going to do is stat up everything. And there's not that many combats, so okay, fair play.
Really no.
Genuine question to Greg, by the way. I saw this in the comments, which I know how to see now. Why believe that a government agency has someone whose job it is to execute a task like call and balance? I don't think there is actually a assistant undersecretary of call and balance, but I would like to think that an organization like NASA that is putting out, you know, professional level releases and brochures and documents all the time would have a layout person who knows how to do layout. Mm-hmm. And that a layout person who knows how to do layout would have James's aversion to unbalanced columns. Because, again, it seems like one of those things where it's not that hard to fix. It doesn't seem like you have to be a professional engaged in deep competence. And again, maybe this is just, oh, it looks easy from the outside, buddy, but you try to balance those columns. I don't know.
I think this is because this is not like, this is done through someone's after hours. This is essentially like a hobby project, but like from a NASA employees that got the basically they're just, you know, working above and beyond what their job normally requires. So
do
it's
we
like,
know that?
I'm assuming.
I think we have no way of knowing, but it's February, March 2024. It's Zine Quest month on Kickstarter. I think this is essentially a zine.
NASA did
a zine.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at this page right now, I can see like another, like whoever's doing this is like, I sympathize with them because I've had the same problems. Like you can see this line is just a little, the spacing is a little more than the previous lines. Just a little bit. I know this is a common thing InDesign does with the last line of a paragraph. You have to hit like return for it to be like, someone who's learning InDesign, but is not like, they're not a full-time graphic designer is my guess.
If you find who's listed as the graphic designer, Michelle Belleville, I feel like if she is, you know, does have a degree in this and hears you say that, she is going to be so upset.
Oh, no.
Like, how dare you?
Let's see here. NASA scientists. Web design. Oh, web design lead. Okay.
Okay.
Which I have huge respect for web designers, but it is a very different discipline.
Yeah.
It's like, that's like, oh, you speak Italian. You should be able to speak Spanish. They sound the same to me.
They're Rome. They're in the same family. Yeah.
Yeah. They use the same, a lot of the same letters.
Again, I know other employees of agencies that like will volunteer to do things just because they believe in the call, you know, they believe in the mission of the organization. So I mean this had to go through a NASA approval. Like they have very specific guidelines of what kind of promotional things they can do and they can't, you know, because they're a public facing agency using taxpayer dollars and stuff like that. So basically there was no budget for this. They did it for I again entirely speculation. Just did it for...
You presume this was done literally for the love of the game.
Yes, quite literally.
Maybe
Michelle, if you're out there and we've just ruined your day, please, I think the story behind this would be absolutely fascinating and I would love to know
To know how this came about.
Did you persuade NASA to publish a role-playing game? I can put that up there with how I persuaded MIT to publish a role-playing I see your Shane Ivy and raise you, Greg.
yeah
we were I wasn't coming about- for you James I know that when it comes to the name drop, I'm like, no, I'm a lightweight and you're heavyweight champion of the world.
I have to reinforce my position at the top of this particular tree. I don't have very many trees. I guard this one jealously. But we were talking about puzzles and the puzzles within the game and the level, as you say, an illusion puzzle feels very low level. There's one a few pages earlier, I think, which is a kind of a reiteration of a puzzle that they've met earlier on, which deals with the colored wavelengths of light, red light and blue light, which happens, first of all, when you're talking to the researchers or looking at their labs. And then there's a reiteration of that puzzle where there's two doors. There's a red door and a blue door. And you have to work out from your memory or whatever it is that the correct door is the red door because it will be older and cooler. And if you screw it up, you take 1d6 damage and you get bumped back and have to presumably go through the other door. You're level 7. Yeah. I don't care what role-playing game you're playing, level 7, you're going to have at least 6 points of hit points that you can have.
Yeah. One per level, yeah. Here it is.
But the whole construction of this trap and a lot of the other ones, there's simple arrow traps and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rudimentary, and a lot of it feels actually very CRPG to me. It feels, particularly some of the setup in the city at the start, a lot like the opening of a computer game, and there are some of the same artifacts. There's a bulletin board where you can read messages that people have left that give hints about what's going on. You can walk past NPCs and just overhear a snatch of dialogue. This is very CRPG. Mm-hmm. And I have no huge conclusions to draw from this, except it's not an optimum way of designing in the year of our Lord 2024, a tabletop role-playing game design. But I think it may say something about the designer's previous experience with the medium.
Well, it's also their design goal, right? Like, they're trying to do something so much more challenging than just, like, design a fun role-playing, a good dungeon crawl adventure. They're doing, like, that has to go through NASA's approval and has to be, like, primarily to educate people about science.
About the Hubble space.
And things like redshift and blueshift, which is what this puzzle is about. You know, redshift, blue wavelength means something is younger and hotter, and red means older and cooler. So, like, that's how design it, it's so it's you know square peg in a round hole kind of thing. Like how do you make this
to switch metaphors, can you juggle all three balls of fun game but also educational but also NASA will be okay with it?
Now you're
juggling four,
yeah,
and that's
so it's an incredibly difficult, it's a very complex ask. I mean, I think I could do it I wouldn't be able to do it any better for something that was meant for new players. Like, my thing would be like, no, just make it a little more challenging, a little like more demanding of the audience.
Oh,
like,
see, yeah. I would never have said for seventh level players, I'd be like, you're first, second level doofuses or even peasants, you know, you make it like a peasant funnel and then you won't have unexpected, you know, it's like, oh, well, as a druid, I will solve this puzzle by transforming into a dire wolverine. Wolverines solve all problems, in my experience.
They don't solve problems. They change the suddenly you have a new problem, as they said in The Good Place.
Yeah.
I would have gone differently. I'd have said, you are NASA scientists and you have been transported to this planet and you are in your NASA scientist body. And
you are only as good at kung fu as a typical NASA scientist.
Yeah, Isekai. Full Isekai, yeah.
It's a world with free energy, so they go, oh, well, there might be a threat. Look, here's some wands. Here's some trinkets. You can do shit now.
You just happen to have a 9mm in your briefcase. What's that? Kind of new wand? Sure, let's go with that.
Depends which branch of NASA you work for, I suppose. I'm going to digress here. I have a soft spot for games in which you play yourself. I don't think there's enough of them. I think it's a lovely, lovely trope, in particular as a way of getting people into role-playing games. Mm-hmm. the two that spring to mind immediately, Villains and Vigilantes.
Oh, really?
In the early edition, you played yourself, you were your secret identity, and then you created the superhero version of yourself. That's great!
Oh,
who hasn't? Who never thought of
the what would I be? Because I play so many horror games, I'm like, I don't know, man. This is bad enough when I see Delta Green Agent Hank Oxfarm get dimensionally extruded into the icy depths of the void. I'm not sure I want to role play me saying, no, tell Martha I love her. Ah!
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to say it's a good fit for all genres, but I think the other one I have to mention is the Doctor Who game that nobody outside the UK in the 1990s ever came across, Time Lord. Where you generate yourself as a player character, and then the idea is you're walking down the street, and oh, there's a police box, open the door, bigger on the inside, and whoosh, you're away as one of the Doctor's companions. And again, if you grew up in the UK, and you have the slightest nerdy tendencies, you have thought about that. You have
That'd
wanted
be a great
to be one
companion.
Of the Doctor's companions. Lovely way of getting people into understanding what role playing is, because you're just being yourself. You're not having to act someone else. For
honestly, I've done this, but I'm kind of surprised neither of you mentioned this yet. It's like the thing for me, or at least among my group, was like if you were going to play yourselves, there's going to be a zombie apocalypse. Like, what would you do? All flesh must be eaten. Yeah, and that's been done. I've done that several times, and that is the premier way of playing yourself. Yeah.
I'm not going to dig it out. You can't see how deep my books are here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Edge Studios' End of the World series.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It did. You play yourself. Mm-hmm. And volume one is the zombie apocalypse. But the great thing about the end of the world is it's like, okay, well, here's the chemical zombie apocalypse, and here's the black magic zombie apocalypse, here's the alien zombie apocalypse. And it's just in each of the books, they're the closest thing I've seen to GURPS source books without the GURPS branding. And they are brilliant. But you play yourself. And I think, Zombie Apocalypse, absolutely brilliant for that. That would be huge.
It's very,
I can't remember which game it was, but there was one that's like, here are the guidelines for figuring out what your stats are. And it's like, okay, hold a full gallon of milk at arm's length and time how long you can hold it out there before you have to put it down. And, you know, and that's like, this will determine your strength stat. And I'm also thinking of the complaint I've heard about these games is that everyone's like, no, man, you're not 16 charisma.
I actually, do remember years ago running an All Flesh Must Be in game with his premise. In the town we were all in, and you're all playing yourselves. And I was an honor system. You follow the guidelines and the rules, how many stats you get to allocate them however you want. And like the theology major was like, I have max skill in firearms. I've been to the rage. I was like, okay, cool, man. He just was making himself the coolest badass mall ninja you could imagine, and he was the only one who didn't make it. Not that I was spiteful.
What's released got here? All the NPCs are colleagues, relatives, public figures you're not super fond of. Oh no,
Greg.
Ben Shapiro's been torn apart by zombies. That's terrible in theory.
Mm-hmm.
I would call foul on your character generation system, Greg, wherever it came from, because the Imperial gallon is larger than the American gallon. So we're at a mathematical disadvantage. That may be the point. I think the V&V one was hold a phone directory at arm's length, which at the moment is everyone gets max spent strength these days. Have you seen in the UK they just published the last phone directories? They're not doing them anymore.
Phone directory, that sounds like
a great title, man. The last phone directory. Anything is usually a pretty good title. The last barista, the last C+ student. I've used both of those. Legend of the Five Rings, when you play yourself.
Oh no, we're just going to be killed as foreigners. Like,
not the face. He's an Oni. Look at the ghastly white radiance from the top of his head.
Yeah. totally blessed.
Oh, and I should add this in is that it's sort of an afterthought in this adventure, but it does. There is. If you decide to stay on the rogue planet, which, you know,
which you would.
You, no sunlight. I don't like the no sunlight, but I do like the no COVID-19. Whoever it is you displaced is in your body back on Earth. And I'm like, I can see this to leading to, what was the,
and they work for NASA.
And they work for NASA. Yeah. So you can get an acceleration murder hobo with the producing headlines like former NASA engineer sought in bus station broadsword slaying.
Yeah.
There's your Delta Green scenario.
NASA Stargate program works. We've conquered Mars already. You know, like we just opened gates, magical gates. Army of elementals descending upon the solar system. Yeah. One of these things and the implications, we're just going to gloss over it. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
One of my first thoughts reading this is, you know, because all right, you go to this other world which has access to this energy source and transport abilities that you can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And all these different species are intelligent and fairly, you know, harmonious. And the highest cultural value is learning and knowledge. And I'm looking at all this. I'm like, this is like upside down Nagalisitu.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nagalisitu. Yeah.
Nagalisitu. If it was like a coffee shop AU.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there was no option for talking the dragon down.
Hmm. Yeah, the assumption is you meet the dragon monologues and tries to kill you, and fails. It is just assumed that the dragon fails, even though there are no stats given for the dragon whatsoever. It's just whatever dragons are in your system, that'll do.
You know.
Yeah. It's felt very video game.
Yeah. Just for the people who weren't aware of Nagalisitu, it's Campaign for Rain, which is,
it's coming.
It's on
its way.
Written by Caleb Stokes, where the player characters can jump into this pocket universe and influence the civilization. Basically sort of blending a bit of like literally the game Civilization with fantasy RPG things. It's like, do you want to give them literacy first or military technology? And then, there's a whole branching thing of like how society evolves, because basically every time you step out of it, time advances like years
at
and
the
years
rate of a year. An hour in the normal world is a year in
Nagalisitu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was one of the players in the campaign. So yeah.
You're not gonna my Midwest accent is betraying me. So did you ever play that Nagalisitu? But the thing I remember from you know, the development cycle is the ultimate crapsack world. It mm-hmm. is everybody there was a slave to evil wizards who were psychotic and sadistic, and they managed to overthrow them. But the evil wizards systematically dehumanized their enslaved masses, never allowed them to learn to read or organize themselves or develop a culture. You know, they were completely broken. And so they're like this blank canvas, and in Bumble's player characters who are like, hurdy dirty dur, have you heard of virtue ethics?
Yeah,
that's the quote for this episode, I think.
Let's see. But yeah, so yeah, you can have that whole civilization kind of aspect with this as a, if you want to turn this into a campaign. So that would be fun.
It's space 1999. It's fantasy space 1999.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
This whole idea of the planet wandering through space for no readily apparent reason.
No, they had they explained how it became a rogue planet, and that was cool.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's
thousands of years ago. You know,
No, just 400 years, man. There's people who remember it. There's GMCs you can meet who are like, oh man, world used to be great. We had a sun, day, night, cool. Seasons, all that cool shit. It's all trash now. All the stuff you take for granted back on Earth. I mean, I bet your elves really... Wait, what do you mean you don't have orcs back on Earth? Who does all the traditional orc jobs?
So overall, I think it's like a noble effort, but yeah, it's obviously just constrained by so many structural limitations. But even with those structural limitations, hopefully, if they do another adventure, they learn a little bit more about graphic design and future conditional, and also just like. If I was going to do an adventure like this, I would focus way more on the puzzles and maybe make it into, I'm thinking maybe not like Trail of Cthulhu, but something where it's about getting this information and interpreting it to figure out the correct solution. And I have no idea how to do that, but maybe it's like you have to reconstruct the Hubble, elements of this machine in order to fix it, to get the space telescope back, something like that. Like not rely on killing monsters. Yeah.
Thing that bugged me. Okay. Yeah. Is let me find the page reference. Is page 24 and. So there is, and they find you find this device, and here we go. Looks to be a computer. The large square screen connects to a box underneath the dais. So there's going to be, and I'm like, I don't know, whatever the hard part of writing fantasy is, it's not describe some magic device that's cooler than a 1960s computer. I'm like, it's could have been anything.
Yeah.
And so, I feel like it was not just a missed opportunity, but it's like they went out of their way.
Yeah.
To negate the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm old.
Like actually Mutant Crawl Classics, which is done by Goodman Games, did Dungeon Crawl Classics, that made this into an art of describing like normal, technology normal to us as weird, strange, arcane artifacts, and it's just making the mundane wondrous and weird. And yeah,
Gamma World.
Mm-hmm.
Some versions of Gamma World also had these things where you would find pieces of old tech, and it's like, this is the most horrifying weapon I've ever seen. Anyone who unlocks its might will be unstoppable in single combat, and it's a lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gamma World, there's some of that has some flowcharts that you have to go through to see if you can work out what it is and kind of what it's for and how it works.
Some of the old ones, yes.
And I know S4, Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, which is the Gary...
The one where you can get a laser gun.
Mm-hmm. Where you can get a laser gun. It's a crashed starship is the dungeon, basically. And it's a laser gun. There's several of them, but they are designed in such a way that it's very difficult to work out how to wear and operate them. And there are pictures of them, and it's just stupid. And, flowcharts, probably a good solution for this kind of thing. Stupidly
complicated. See, back when I have a copy of Expedition to the Barrier Peaks up in the attic with my, because, I'm contemporaneous with it. And if I was running it when I'd bought it, it would have been just like, you got a laser gun now. Go to town, son.
Yeah.
And it's high noon at the end of the universe. Light them fuckers up. And now, if I was using it, these people would, my players would be like, it's not even worth it. We maimed.
My Vorpal Spear's way better. Yeah.
I maimed two of my friends figuring out which end the fire comes out of. And then and we don't know how many charges it has. So we just assume, it's magic death stick. You point it and the thing on the other end catches fire. And then at some point, as they're relying on the magic death stick and a major fight, it'd just be like, no, it stopped working. Why? You don't know why. It's magic death stick, son. It's like,
John Woo rules. will run out of ammunition when it is dramatically important for it to do so.
That's the right answer. We do have a couple questions. Do you know if it's available in print? I don't think so. I would be really surprised if it came out in print, but the website doesn't mention anything, so, you know. What system and concept would you like to take forward if NASA asked you to make a game? So I would do like really lean on the puzzle, and I would do maybe, you know, something, if it was fantasy, like, I don't know, something like Portal 2, but fantasy, like really complex puzzles, solving and teamwork, cooperation. So like,
be isekai.
I think, yeah, because maybe, you know, you could do a fun thing where like some of the characters are from the fantasy world and others are from Earth.
That would be dope. Would be first rate.
Yeah, that's something like new players could really get into.
That's classy as hell. I like that.
So that's what I would be thinking. Yeah, Portal 2, but with like Redshift, Blueshift kind of puzzles and stuff like that, and lenses and bouncing lights off of mirrors to get the things. Ooh. And like, that's what I
did. The Three Hearts and Three Lions by Poole Anderson.
James.
I was going to say, if it's about a Hubble, surely the thing has to climax with you using Hubble to take a picture of something impossibly far away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's what Hubble, I mean, yes, shifting and dark energy and the potential of the whole thing, but Hubble is old technology now. And, you know, James Webb, we love James Webb. It seems to be really missing a trick there. Hubble is almost a MacGuffin in this. Yes, it's the origin of a lot of the puzzles along the way, but essentially it's just an object that you find at the end, just kind of lying on the floor. And
it's a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
See, the way I'd do it, which is probably hugely impractical, but I'm like, let's really dig into the magic system there, and the whole game becomes about, you know, we are gonna stealth teach the players about Redshift and Blueshift because all their cool powers are based on system mastery of Redshift and
Blueshift. That's cool. That's nice. Yeah.
Nice.
So we could.
Gentlemen, may I draw your attention to, once again, we've been outplayed. Gareth Hanrahan, all respect to him, has
Oh my god, yes, Hubbler.
Can't top that.
Yeah,
can't top that. That's too good.
That's okay, so that we could combine all of these together. So like puzzles, some are isekai, some are scientists, some are fantasy, some are scientists. Powers work on understanding these scientific principles. The boss is the Behubbler, but we have to use the Hubble to perceive the Behubbler.
Hubble can safely look at the Behubbler.
There we go. To get like the bit of information we need to unlock the vault or whatever it is. Yeah.
Or, you know, when it's not aiming the anti-magic ray, that's when we can get in and use our Redshift Blueshift powers to foil to offset its powers, but we can only know how to use them with the Hubble operator telling us.
Yeah. And so like the whole adventure is like getting aligning the telescope and like powering up, and so like every puzzle involves
the DCC funnel with a shuttle crew. Someone's never played Blacksat.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Hubble shuttle.
Yeah. Hubble fuffle. Chekhov space telescope. Yes, there we go. That's what we need. Always be hubbling. Yeah.
Show them control group. There's an adventure I wrote.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
For Delta Green, where you are all shuttle astronauts, and it was meant to be an introductory one because it's like, there's no combat in this. It's all skill and sand rolls. It just, you know, and you don't have to build your own character or anything. You'll be assigned a character who hates one of the other characters probably. And yeah, so control group Blacksat has
Black Sand Falls.
So there it is. Yes, it's even in the you can see it,
and a pair of strange civilians into space in 2010 on a shuttle mission. A simple satellite repair mission leads them to the truth of mathematics and physics beyond all wonder and fear. I ran this in RPVR, had a great time. It's definitely like a good introduction to.
Don't get too attached to your pre-gen.
Yeah, no, like, it's perfect for conventions and one-shots, and it's a very cool, fun game.
Black Sat Survivors Return Adapted to Vomit Comets. Nice. Yeah.
Is that Vomit Comets as in the plane, or is that a new player ability?
Ooh. I feel, special one-time ultimate ability, Unleash the Vomit Comet upon...
It's a daily.
That sounds like an artifact of Nurgle, though, now that I think about it. I've been really playing a lot of Warhammer games lately. So, behold the Vomit Comet. The time of Nurgle is at hand.
Or a terrible translation of something Junji Ito came up with.
Oh no.
I think a more appropriate translation is Hellstar Ramina. Thank you.
Which is very good.
That was the first Ito thing. That either that or Amagahara Fault was the first Ito thing I saw, and I'm like, this guy's onto something.
Oh man, my first one was Uzumaki. I just started with the all-timer, and I was like, hell
Uzumaki,
yeah.
I in my heart, I consider that his masterpiece.
Oh yeah.
Tomy is awful good. Tomy is like, this is the guy comes out of the blocks and everyone's like, where did this kid come from? Holy shit.
Yeah.
But Uzumaki is like, yes, I'm going to make a statement about how I am the greatest horror comic artist. Period.
Yeah. I mean, it's
anybody?
It's cosmic horror without referencing anything Lovecraftian. It's totally believable. It's cosmic horror. It's just fits perfectly.
And I got to like chapter 4 and thought I was at peak Squick. Mm-hmm. And then came another chapter. And then I'm like, wow, this is even grosser. Yep. This is even worse. Wow.
So our hour is up, but before we go, obviously, we are still podcasting season 3. We're off to a really great start at $5,200 out of 3,000. But just to go over some of the rewards and games and well, book titles that we're looking at. So we're looking not just at core books, we're looking at adventures and supplements. So our core books we chose for some industry classics, you know, like GURPS, but also some like innovative game designs like Alice is Missing, which is played through text messaging in one session. It's a very unique game. We'll be based on the number of stretch goals we get, we'll be reviewing anywhere from 3 to 6 books per category. So, and there's 12 per category. So we're going to be missing a lot, but you know, we'll see what we get. But adventures, you know, I haven't played all of these, but like Cheery the Gods is a great, adventure that highlights the strengths of sci-fi horror, role playing. Also Ego Hunter, since we've already done Eclipse Phase, and Convergence is a classic of the Delta Green. But also like Warhammer Fantasy, Rough Knight of Three Feathers. I think James might have something to say about that.
Possibly.
And Jailbreak.
And your Yellow Clearance Black Blacks Blues, which is difficult to say.
Yeah.
Didn't even know Arsmagica had a Grogs book. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I actually looked up, I focused on looking at books, supplements for books we'd already reviewed. And I was like, oh, well, let's talk about Grogs. That's great. Like, that's the little guys of Arsmagica. And
the chorus.
Yeah. There's so many GURPS books. I just picked one that I personally liked. So it's Albacore. It's 1950s sci-fi horror ridiculousness, giant ants and radiation and all that fun stuff.
Fair enough. A quick word on City Book 1. It's a generic city book. Basically the first great city book. Early 80s, won pretty much all the awards going that year. It's really lovely. I still have a very warm place for it in my heart. There were a lot of subsequent city books, but it's Basically, it's Flying Buffalo. It's the Tunnels and Trolls people at the height of their powers. I would argue possibly one of the best things they ever did.
Yeah. I've heard good things
about it. So vote for that one.
Yeah. and let's see here. I wrote this book for Red Markets, Trabajo. It's an enclave setting, a little fortified settlement in the midst of the loss surrounded by zombies. And Greg wrote City of Lies for Legend of the Five Rings, which is, with Shogun being a very popular TV show right now, that might be something to look into. And I've heard good things about 50 Phantoms, which is a pirate sort of themed setting for Savage Worlds. So
the important thing, listeners, is that we're going to have a lot of fun.
And our zine. We will have two games and an essay at a minimum. Maybe we'll throw in some more stuff. But I'll be writing an essay on the art, a review, and a tabletop role-playing game, because it's a bit of a challenge. And James, what's the elevator pitch for your game, for Cyberpunk?
Cyberpunk, it's a cold, nasty, near future setting. It's one wet weekend into the future, in which you are anonymous. Like in Reservoir Dogs, you start off just being Mr. Red and Mr. Blue and Mrs. Pink and stuff. You know nothing about the other player characters other than their archetype. You will do anything. But the system is based entirely on the 70s kid game Kerplunk, where you pull out sticks and marbles fall down. And it started off as a Dread parody, and it's turned into something that I'm really very proud of.
We might see an extended edition,
It's becoming bigger than... So you'll be getting essentially the first draft, and if you like it and think it's more than just a throwaway joke, I may turn it into something bigger. I'm surprised how good it's turned
out. Kerplunk, the game?
Yeah.
But you can pick it up on eBay for, certainly in the UK, about
like
£10.
$5.
Yeah.
It's not expensive. It's what, you know, from the age of great big plastic games.
Oh, my God.
$11 for the world's smallest Kerplunk game from Target. Man, I don't need that.
But Greg, tell us about Blanket Hog.
Blanket Hog is so dumb, y'all. It's fun, but it is basically just this dumb little one-player, two-page game where it's a cold night, and your partner's in bed already, and they've made themselves into a snuggy, warm blanket burrito, and you're trying to get your blankie so you can stay warm, but you can't wake up your partner or something.
That would be mean. You can't do that.
You don't want to wake up.
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you want your pet partner to wake you up in the middle of the night with their ice cold feet.
Exactly. So we're already got monthly live streams, which will be like this one, but after the Kickstarter ends, we'll announce today when we start doing it. And so we'll be doing that. So we'll be doing three, and we'll be picking more PDFs and other things to look at, and a variety of certainly if topical things come up. And answer questions too. We of course are over 5,000, so we'll have three more episodes, four per category now. But if we can get 6,000 more live streams, more episodes, and then if we can get all the way to $11,000, each of us will pick a book for each of us shall pick a book for us to review on three new episodes. And who knows what I could pick? I could, there's a list of games that I could threaten James.
It just says a book.
Yeah.
Each try and maybe read it just again. Non-start. This project, man.
If I'm feeling mean, it could be like Phoenix Command.
why would you harm yourself just to harm your friends?
I'm a bit of a masochist. So if you're not familiar, Phoenix Command is
great.
A role-playing game with angles and trajectories for bullets. It is the firearm simulator du jour of the 80s.
Legendarily complicated.
Yeah.
Is it the one that came with the clear overlays?
No, that was the Aces and Eights.
Which I've heard good things about.
I think other ones. There was a modern day one.
Well, the Aces and Eights is pretty recent, like 5 or 6 years old, I think. But like,
no. I meant this is an 80s game, but set in the present day.
Yeah.
With gunshot wounds, basically.
Yes. Like, I have the book and I just skimmed it, and it has rules for, like, if you're standing on a hill, here's, like, you need to know the angle of the hill so we can measure the fall off of your bullet accurate. And it has, like, shotgun pellet distribution. Like, you have to track every single pellet from your shotgun attack. It's kind of...
Is this the one that had... No, it was the Morrow Project, where it's like, well, how much did it damage your skin? And how much did it damage your muscle? And how much did it damage the bone? And how much did it damage the connective tissue?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you've got... It's like, we're not going to abstract this out to hit points. Playing this game is essentially like your first year of med school.
City of Lies remains the best campaign I ever ran.
Wow.
It was the starting point.
Great game.
Cannot be blamed for one player becoming the Oracle of Water by mistakes. By the way, Gareth, I've been rereading the Borealis connection for Fall of Delta Green. I'm really tempted to run that next after I finish my current campaign. It's a really cool, like, globetrotting Fall of Delta 1970s Cthulhu investigation and shit. It's very cool. 12k stretch goal, probably not for everything. That's a lot more for only 1,000 more. But if we get to $11,000, I'll add some more stretch goals. We'll figure something out. Guess what? It'll be more podcasts, probably will expand the scene too.
Surprise. What's inside the podcast? It's more podcasts.
Yeah.
A nesting Russian
made out of podcast.
Yeah. Is there an app for Phoenix Command? I mean, Phoenix Command was written in the 80s. So, yeah, no, there was.
I think it's unavailable. I went looking for Phoenix Command because we referenced it in an earlier episode, and I was looking for it for the show notes. I think it's unavailable.
Oh, yeah. Darn. We won't have our brains.
Well, there's a couple of games that are made with it. I think Living Steel is made with the same.
Oh, yeah.
Which is supposed to be a great setting, right?
Yeah. So I'd have to look to see if the Living Steel RPG. It depends on what I think at the time. Once we reach that threshold, what am I in the mood for? It could be something like a genuinely game I love, like Monsters and Other Childish Things, which is near and dear to my heart since that's my first.
Ross cannot shut up about Fist.
Fist is really fun. Fist RPG is super. It's just an interesting aesthetic, and let me pull it up on the thing.
I'd rather read that than...
Yeah, like I said, am I going to feel mean, or am I going to feel like, let's do something fun and great? We'll see. Fist, like, uses it's- Power by the Apocalypse, but very stripped down, and characters are really interesting because you have 100 traits, and you get to pick two, or you can roll randomly to see what you get, and they have more now, and so your characters only have 1d6 hit points, but it doesn't matter because you can it's great. It's just a fun pulp game. So that's something to look forward to. If we get to $11,000, we'll be
hypnosis. You are locked in a permanent state of self hypnosis, which maximizes your efficiency.
Yeah.
Speak or use nutrient expressions.
Yeah, exactly. It just makes goofy little guys for your character, so everyone's very quirky and unique, and it takes like 10 minutes to make a character, so if they get blown up, it doesn't matter. Brilliant. And there's a new box set coming sooner or later. It's powered by the box in the sense it's like player facing, roll 2d6 plus an attribute, like that's about it. But James, any thoughts on what you would pick?
I'm tempted to go for something really kind of outre and out at the far end of nonsense, like Creaks and Crawdads, which I've talked about before. Creaks and Crawdads, but something similarly as neat, something that came out in like 200 copies. Not bad, just clearly, and the evolutionary dead end. Dead end that it just died at that.
I love those.
Theatrics. Somebody was talking about Theatrics today, which was attempt at a diceless narrative based system in 1994 or 1995. Oh, he tries so hard. And I think, but looking at why it failed could be really interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, smart people behind it.
It actually is available. So, that sounds fun. I'd love to. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, Evolutionary Dead Ends are great. Like, I love those games that go down an angle no one else has done before or since. And it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my other choice would be West End Star Wars Descent. Because it's a milestone in the field.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant piece of design, responsible for so much of what we think of as Star Wars today, just in not just the rules, but the look and feel of the book. It's an amazing job.
Yeah.
West End in the mid 80s was the most exciting games company in the world. And I include computer games companies in that. Everything they touched, with the exception of, what was Greg Kostikian's Red Scare thing?
Fortress America.
I'm blanking on the name. I was talking about it yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of like the cover has a big picture of Lennon on it.
Where did it go?
But anyway, I've with the exception of around everything somewhere. They did was fascinating. Their miniatures games, their all the Star Wars stuff, Ghostbusters, the lot of it. It's all Tales of the Arabian Nights as well, the narrative board game that birthed 1,000 narrative board games. It's all good, and I think West End Star Wars is the pinnacle. Though I'm fascinated by theatrics, I think actually it would probably be West End Star Wars.
Okay, yeah, I mean, really good pick. Like that, there's a lot to talk about in that game.
Yeah, some of it just was the avid paranoia as well. Paranoia, also a great Kostikian game. It's just a company and a designer with a common ethos to push this medium as hard as they could to break new ground, do quality product along the way, and couple it to interesting licenses. Mm-hmm. Brilliant stuff.
Greg?
I might be tempted to go for an early Evil Hat game, Penny for My Thoughts, which you can't get it on drive-thru, but you can still buy the PDF on IPR.
Oh, cool.
It is, I've never run a bad game of it. It's pretty simple and pretty direct, but it approaches gaming it approaches things a little differently, and it's always, I don't know why I've always liked it. Or we could do I'll figure something out.
Man, look at this review. Shannon Applecline describes it as a restorative storytelling game that Hogshead Publishing had been producing in its new style line a decade before.
There is no higher praise.
That's a pretty good way to end this episode, this live stream. Having back the Kickstarter, please do. We really appreciate the support. We're looking forward to getting that.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Tell your frenemies. Tell those rivals that you're not sure if you want to kill them steal the blankets from at night. Just tell everybody. We'll be here on the Letter Narrative Discord, which are links in the everywhere on our stuff. Join our Discord and have fun. But we'll be talking to everyone later. Bye.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.